6 minutes after the hour of 12 noon, Friday, April 1st. It's April Fool's Day, 2022. Dave Krieger with you on the Power Hour. Gee, do we almost sound like a big raving commercial? No, it's not that bad. I'll tell you what, though. We have been and continue to get calls about the online doctor that people can trust who's a COVID expert and where you can get a pharmacy that isn't going to gouge you for the off-label medications. That website is mygotodoc.com. And it's tempting to think the worst is over, but the experts, of course, we know who they are, predicting another wave. Got this BA.2 going on now. So it's smart to keep the meds on hand so you can start fast treatment. Even the low-risk patients can benefit from off-label meds because they can prevent long COVID, which can be debilitating. This is according to a recent large-scale study of the VA. 150,000 vets showed increased risk of heart attack and stroke even after a year later, up to 72% more likely than people who weren't even infected. This is one of the reasons why we've had Dr. Syed Haider on the show twice. He set up mygotodoc.com, and we at the Power Hour endorse it because he's a COVID expert who's treated over 50,000 people with zero deaths. And unlike other sites, you can register for free. I did. You can ask questions ad infinitum, ad nauseum, like I do. They connect you with independent pharmacies that won't gouge on all those off-label meds like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, budesonide, fluvoxamine, and all the other stuff that Dr. Syed Haider uses as his arsenal to cure COVID. Here's the other interesting thing about COVID. You know, people with all of these various variants that are out there, you know, there's reasons why there are variants and why there's three different programs on the website, which you'll discover when you go there. I did. And if you are a Power Hour listener and you message Dr. Haider's group and you tell him, look, I think I'm coming down with something. If you mention you're with the Power Hour, they will actually treat you. Because before they were basically refusing people who are actively sick. They want to stock up your medicine cabinet ahead of time so that you can start treatment fast, which is what all the frontline doctors are advocating. Now, if you say, look, I've actually got it. I think I have full-blown COVID. Can you treat me? He will do it if you tell him you're a Power Hour listener. We appreciate you. Go-to source is mygotodoc.com. Their phone number, 281-219-7367. And our phone lines are open this hour, 844-769-2944. If you have a question about fermentation, why would we bring that up? Well, it goes along the line with their thinking about what just leaked out into the news when the commander-in-chief got on the media and announced, yes, friends, there will be a food shortage. This goes in hand with that. And there is an author that Joyce Riley had on a long time ago named Sander Katz. And they know, everybody knows him as Sandor Kraut because he has written a book, the most recent one being Sandor Katz's Fermentation Journeys. And it's available, I think, in Kindle and where most major books are sold. And, of course, he is a fermentation revivalist. He specializes in this stuff, and he has all these overlapping interests in cooking, nutrition, and gardening, starting with sauerkraut. He found an old crock buried in his barn, harvested cabbage from the garden, chopped it up, salted it, and waited. The first kraut tasted so alive and powerfully nutritious. And, see, that's one of the things that, you know, it's good for gut health. And we're going to be getting into it this hour with Sander Katz. Welcome back to the show, sir. It's been a long time.
So happy to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Okay. So, folks, now, here's the thing. We're going to go through a lot of information right now with Sander about this. And so if you have any questions regarding fermentation or comments or experiences that you've had or there's something you're doing with fermenting your food that doesn't seem to be working right, 844-769-2944 is the number to call. We can get into a good heavy-duty conversation about it because you wanted solutions. This is why the Power Hour is bringing you these solutions. And there are a lot of health benefits to fermenting, and we're going to talk to Sander about that in this hour. So I guess the easiest question to ask, Sander, is what is fermenting? Explain it to people that don't get it.
Okay, well, that's the most important question to start with. Fermentation is, you know, basically foods and beverages that have been transformed by the metabolic activities of microorganisms. And you know, almost every person in almost every part of the world eats and drinks products of fermentation every day. They, you know, fermented foods and beverages are thoroughly integral to, you know, all of our different culinary traditions. Bread is fermented, coffee is fermented, chocolate is fermented, vanilla is fermented, cheese is fermented, cured meats are fermented, condiments are fermented, you know, sauerkraut, pickles, olives are fermented. You know, there's just an incredible range of foods and beverages that are produced with the assistance of microorganisms.
Amazing. Now, does beer fall into that category?
Beer absolutely falls into that category. Yeah.
I had to throw that in there, Sandor.
Beer is one of the most popular products of fermentation. Absolutely.
Now, is it really bad for you? I mean, excess is one thing, but it's like, you know, there's certain types of fermented beers like Guinness. I'm a big fan of Guinness because it's low calorie. And I understand, you know, people have told me, well, drinking Guinness is actually healthier for you than drinking other kinds of beer. And I'm not sure whether to take issue with that or not. I mean, since you're into fermenting, what do you know about that?
Well, I mean, personally, what I would say is that, you know, anything regarding food, you know, whether it's fermented or not, you know, it's not that the food is intrinsically good or bad. It's all about, you know, how you're using it and in, you know, and what else are you eating? You know, what is the total picture of your diet? So, no, I mean, I certainly don't think beer is bad. You know, obviously, if you drink too much beer, that can be bad. If you, you know, drink beer instead of eating nutritious foods, that could be bad. But, enjoying some beer, I don't think it's bad. And certainly historically, there's a lot of evidence that beer has been both nutritionally important and, you know, an important way of getting fluids into people in places where the water has not been potable. Beer, I certainly don't consider beer to be a bad food. But I don't consider any food to be a bad food.
Right. Now, the thing is that, you know, when we're talking about the health benefits of fermenting, I'm looking at probiotic effect and something to do with your gut. So you want to elaborate on that?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, I would say that there are a lot of nutritional benefits of fermentation and, you know, probiotics is the one that's getting the most attention right now. And probiotics can be profound, but pre-digestion. I mean, all fermentation is pre-digestion, breaking down nutrients before we eat them. And, you know, almost all fermented foods, have greater bioavailability of nutrients than non-fermented versions of the same kinds of foods. So, even if you're not eating them alive with the probiotics intact, there are definitely nutritional benefits to eating fermented foods. But as far as the probiotics, all of us who were raised in the 20th century, I mean, all we ever heard about bacteria was how dangerous they were and how important it was to avoid them and how, you know, we had all these chemicals that we could use to destroy them. But it turns out that bacteria are critically important, not only to us, but they're the matrix of all life, and all life is descended from bacteria. No multicellular form of life has ever lived without bacteria. And, you know, in the case of our human bodies, they provide all sorts of essential services for us. They enable us to effectively digest our food. They synthesize nutrients for us in our bodies. What we call our immune system is the work of bacteria. They regulate all kinds of body chemistry for us, including a lot of our brain chemistry. So they influence how we think and how we feel. And the sad fact is that because of chemical exposure and because of changes in our diets, people have generally diminished biodiversity in the gut compared to people in the past. And live fermented foods with their probiotic bacteria still intact, can be excellent sources for, increasing biodiversity in the gut and potentially improving digestion, immune function, and many other aspects of our health and well-being.
Right. So the part about being easier to digest, this is because some of the natural sugars and starches have been broken down?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I think in terms of easier digestion, the most vivid example would be soybeans. You know, the reason why the vegetarian subcultures of the West adopted soybeans as almost a singular replacement for meat and milk is that soybeans are the plant food with the most concentrated protein. The problem is that our human bodies can't access it. If you just soak soybeans, cook them till they're soft enough to eat and eat them, you cannot get most of the protein out of the soybeans. And when you ferment the soybeans, it breaks down the proteins into amino acids, which are the building blocks of proteins. And so the nutrient of the soybean becomes much more accessible to our bodies. And in, you know, many different kinds of foods, this is true.
So this basically has the benefits that, like we've seen with sourdough, with improvements in mineral availability, lower glycemic responses, and a greater breakdown of all the proteins.
Exactly.
This helps. So it, yeah.
And sourdough is a great example of a fermentation. And, you know, sourdough, which I would call natural leavening, that involves a broader community of organisms than simply yeast. It involves all these bacteria, and the bacteria can break down some of the gluten in the grains, that make the minerals more bioavailable. It's through this process of pre-digestion that minerals become more easily accessible to us.
You see, that's one of the things that a lot of my friends that are gluten intolerant, they're like, well, I just don't eat bread. And I'm like, oh man, because I like sourdough bread, and there is a reason for it, obviously. But, you know, the thing is what it's made with, whether it's, you know, people are I think have this adverse reaction when you say white flour. You know, it's like, okay, if you're making this out of non-GMO, then it just becomes a pissing contest basically over whether something is that healthy for you to eat because it's been fermented, or whether or not you just avoid bread altogether because you have a serious gluten intolerance. What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, I think that, people's bodies are different than, you know, people with celiac disease. I would recommend that they just stay away from wheat and other glutinous grains. You know, the sourdough fermentation does not eliminate the gluten. It just reduces the amount of it. Most people, with gluten intolerances, you know, by decreasing the amount of gluten, the bread becomes tolerable, but people have different situations, so it's very difficult to generalize. I mean, a similar example might be people who are lactose intolerant. Well, when you ferment milk into yogurt, you know, what the bacteria are consuming is lactose, and they're turning that into lactic acid and other minor byproducts. And so, a lot of people who cannot drink a glass of milk can eat yogurt, but not all yogurt is the same. And neither are all people. And so, most commercial yogurt is fermented for 2.5 hours. When I make yogurt, I usually ferment it for 12 to 16 hours. So much more of the lactose gets consumed during the fermentation. It also gives it a sharper flavor, more acidity. And I think the assumption in marketing of yogurt in the United States is that people want it as minimally sour as possible.
All right, so if I eat sauerkraut, am I going to be happier? Am I not going to have anxiety or depression, or is that just a myth?
Well, I think I would say that is an oversimplification. If you eat sauerkraut, you will, have some expansion of biodiversity in your gut, and that could have many different positive effects. Among them, brain chemistry changes that could, make you less depressed and make you happier. But the important word is it could. You know, I would say that it's possible that it won't, but it certainly isn't going to hurt you, and you might as well try it.
So let's talk about a second the fact that if you eat fermented foods as part of your balanced diet, you don't have to totally eat fermented foods, because I actually know people that eat at least, you know, a small portion of sauerkraut a day, because that's probably the most commonly noted fermented food out there. But the thing is there's apparently a lower risk of heart disease coming into play here as far as reductions in blood pressure and cholesterol balance and all that stuff. What are we looking at here as far as heart health?
yeah, I mean, so many aspects of, you know, our physiology are related to gut bacteria. And, you know, individual foods do not cure diseases. Individual foods do not create wellness. But what fermented foods as a group, including sauerkraut, can do is, you know, they can help to, expand biodiversity. And, you know, that can have a lot of benefits for people.
Sure.
And in terms of your idea of like not eating all fermented foods, I mean, it would be ridiculous to eat all fermented foods. You know, fermented foods are not a fad diet. Fermented foods have been part of human cultural experience for at least 10,000 years that archaeology has demonstrated. It's part of every culinary tradition. Almost everyone who's listening to this is eating and drinking products of fermentation already every day. These are not, you know, strange alien superfoods. They are just part of our legacy of human food that we are learning more and more about how important they are. And particularly the live fermented foods. So like not all sauerkraut is the same. If you go to a supermarket and buy sauerkraut in a can that has been heat processed, well, the heat processing to enable it to be stable in a can is going to destroy the probiotic benefits of it. But, you know, more and more it's possible to find, a live sauerkraut. Generally, you'll find it in a refrigerated section at the, on the edges of the supermarket rather than on the shelves in the middle of the supermarket. And, you know, live sauerkraut has, you know, tremendous, probiotic benefit, but, you know, so does yogurt. So does kefir. And there's not one singular food that gives us the most probiotic benefit because it's all about biodiversity. The more different kinds of live fermented foods you eat, the more biodiversity you are ingesting and introducing into your gut.
Sure. I mean, these are safe for a majority of the people, but I mean, people that, like, for example, have a histamine intolerance, are they going to experience side effects eating fermented foods?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that that's the biggest exception is that, you know, the process of fermentation can increase histamines in food. And so, people who have, histamine intolerance are the people who are, you know, going to be the most challenged by fermented foods. And, you know, there's nothing is for everyone.
Now you talked about the canned sauerkraut because of the heat process. What about the sauerkraut in the jars?
Well, I mean, most of the sauerkraut in the jars is in a refrigerated section. And generally on their label, they're going to say live, raw, unpasteurized. And you know, these are all words that are used in marketing to let people know that the sauerkraut is alive and does contain, bacteria that are probiotic.
I've seen a lot of them in like bags. They're a clear plastic bag like a pouch. And as you say, they sit in the refrigerated section over near the deli or the vegetable aisles. And you're saying that's probably the better one to get.
Well, I mean, look for the ones that say they're alive. I mean, there are some brands that are sold like next in the sausage section of the supermarket that might be in a plastic bag but are not alive. But some people marketing living sauerkraut are packaging it in plastic bags. But they will always tell you that it's a live product. I mean, you know, you can be sure by going to a natural food store that you're getting a living sauerkraut, but more and more it's turning up in supermarkets everywhere.
Sure. Now, as part
by the way, let me just say that there are small regional brands almost everywhere in the United States. You can find a local or regional brand of fermented vegetables, and sauerkraut is only one style. I mean, you can have fermented cucumber pickles, sour pickles. You can have kimchi. There's a lot of different variations on sauerkraut, and I would say that's one of the things that's really expanding, is that there are more and more possibilities. So if you don't like cabbage, or you have thyroid problems and you have to stay away from cruciferous vegetables, you can you could buy fermented carrots or fermented celery, or other kinds of vegetables that can be fermented. The process is actually extremely versatile and can be done with almost any vegetables. And the easiest and most straightforward thing is make it yourself. It'll take you about 10 minutes in the kitchen to prepare a quart jar full of sauerkraut, and then a couple of weeks of waiting while it ferments. But, all the bacteria that you need is on every vegetable. You just shred the vegetables, salt them to taste, season them as you like it, spend a couple of minutes squeezing them. And what that does is breaks down cell walls and releases juice. What you want to do is get the vegetables submerged under their own juices, and that protects them from air and the flow of oxygen, and enables the lactic acid bacteria that we're trying to cultivate to dominate in the environment. Taste it at periodic intervals, because the acids accumulate over time. And at whatever point you think it's strong enough, move it into the fermentation slowing device in your kitchen, which is your refrigerator. It's a really simple, straightforward process.
Interesting. Now, we also, in the email blast that we give to all of our listeners out there, if you haven't subscribed to that, you need to go to thepowerhour.com and sign up for our email blast. We're going to give you the top five health benefits of kombucha, the health benefits of kefir, the health benefits of miso, the health benefits of sourdough. All of these health guides are going to be posted online in your email blast. You can download them, save them as a PDF, and put them in your file. I do with everything, food storage, the whole nine yards. Canning is another thing that I think we need to explore at some point in time, and that we're going to talk about after we get back from the break here, because we're getting ready to go to break. We're going to bring Sandor back on, and we're going to talk about 10 fermented foods you can easily make at home. We'll talk about the recipes and all that good stuff. 844-769-2944 is the number to call, and if you have questions about fermentation, about recipes, about anything that you want to improve on or talk about, we have Sandor Katz on the phone with us this hour. And this is the chance. This is your big opportunity, because he hasn't been on here for a while, since 2012 with Joyce. So anyway, 844-769-2944, the number to call. Get in the queue. We'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us.
There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita silver lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
We We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Minutes after the hour of 12 noon, Friday, April 1st. That's right. It's April Fool's Day. And of course, there's no April Fools on the radio here. I would probably try to talk to you about Lou Flirpa. And, of course, you know, there's a couple of funnies involving that. And if we have some time left at the end of the show, we will. Right now, though, we have Sandor Katz, also known as Sandor Kraut, on the phone with us. And, 844-769-2944, the number to call. We're talking about fermentation. We've covered pretty much the basics of it and what it does. Now, of course, those of you who only think that sauerkraut, and I'm not a big kimchi fan either. I know it's a Korean process, and I know that when I lived in Hawaii that everybody over there was doing kimchi. This is a big thing over there. But I don't know whether that's, you know, certain areas of the world like it more than others, but that's only one of 10 different fermented foods that are going to be listed on our email blast. And that's coming to you as soon as we can get it out within 24 hours after the show ends. You'll be able to listen to this broadcast again. We are happy for all of those of you homeschool moms out there, because here's some education you will not get in school. It's important because, like I said, we've heard we're going to have a food shortage. Here's a great way to do it at home. So the more of these solutions that we can offer, the better. And again, if you have questions, 844-769-2944, do not be ashamed or embarrassed to call the show, because there is no stupid question when it comes to gardening, growing food, fermenting food, preparing foods that are healthy, that will sustain you for long periods of time. I'm thinking, Sandor, that canning is probably going to be something that we really need to be paying attention to as part of this.
Well, I mean, canning is another way of preserving food. You know, refrigerators and freezers are, but refrigerators and freezers take energy and didn't exist until about 100 years ago. Canning only was invented in the 19th century, so it's about a 200-year-old process. Canning, we could think of canning as the diametrical opposite of fermentation. So with fermentation, we are, cultivating microorganisms that enable us to effectively preserve food. So, you know, cheese we could think of as preserved milk. Sauerkraut is preserved vegetables. Cured meats are preserved meats. Relying upon fermentation and to some degree salting, and in certain cases also some drying. Whereas canning is really, you're sterilizing food in a jar. And, it can also be a practical strategy for preserving food. I mean, we don't need one singular strategy or a hierarchy of strategies. There are a lot of different ways, and, there are a lot of, you know, wonderful applications of canning as well.
Right. Now, the thing is that sauerkraut, obviously, when somebody says fermented food, boom, first thing that comes to your mind is sauerkraut. Now,
I mean, not everybody. I mean, I meet a lot of people who think beer is the first thing that comes to their mind.
There you go. And it could very well be. We brought that up in the show, which is why I brought it up, because that's the first thing that came into mind. So when we're talking about stuff like this, however, and this is something that I was reading in the show notes, is that you were talking about possibly, if you didn't have a refrigerator, what's the alternative? Burying it in the ground when you ferment?
No, no, not at all. Not at all. I mean, you know, just a cool spot. Like, you know, the parts of the world where people have cellars, this is why they have cellars, because the cellar keeps a temperature that's close to the temperature of the earth. They don't have to bury things in the ground. You know, the preservation methods that have developed in different parts of the world are manifestations of the specific conditions in those parts of the world. So like where I live in Tennessee, you know, the old time houses mostly have cellars because that was such an important, you know, way, whether it's just putting storage vegetables into a cooler spot, putting the sauerkraut, down there, hanging hams to cure down there, but having a cool spot that's not, doesn't have to be as cold as a refrigerator, but it really enhances your preservation possibilities. Now, if you happen to be living in a, you know, in a tropical or a subtropical place, it's harder to preserve food, but it's also less necessary to preserve food because, you know, there's a steady flow of fresh plant-based food available throughout the year. But you know, food traditions really have evolved in different places as a manifestation of the specific climatic conditions of different places.
All right, so we are including, when we're talking about sauerkraut here, obviously they have beer brewing apparatus that you can buy if you want to brew your own beer, which, I mean, if you're a beer drinker, and we're not talking about, you know, we're talking about moderation. Beer, by the way, is a very barterable item, as is most of the other fermented foods that we're going to be talking about here. And we're going to include a basic sauerkraut recipe to get you started as far as your cabbage, your salt, your caraway seeds and all that. It's one of the easiest fermented foods to make, according to what I'm reading in my show notes, but there are others as well. The difference in the process between sauerkraut and fermenting it versus pickled vegetables. What's your take on that, Sandor?
Well, I mean, I would say that, you know, sauerkraut is a style of pickling vegetables. I mean, a pickle is anything preserved in an acidic medium. And in sauerkraut, you're shredding vegetables and salting them in order to encourage the growth of lactic acid bacteria that create lactic acid. And the lactic acid is what preserves the vegetables. And because it's preserved in acid, it's a pickle. You know, I, as a kid growing up in New York City, I was crazy about pickles. The pickles that we ate in my family were the Eastern European style fermented pickles. We called them sour pickles outside of New York. They're frequently called kosher dills. But there's never vinegar added to that. It's always lactic acid from the cucumbers grows and acidifies them and enables the cucumbers to be preserved. Now, you can also pour a hot vinegar solution over something and pickle it that way. And that has certain advantages. It'll be shelf stable for a longer period of time, but it has certain disadvantages because you know, pouring the hot liquid over the vegetables rather than leaving them raw will diminish vitamin C and other nutrients. You won't have the probiotic qualities. So, you know, there are trade-offs, and then there are just a million other ways of fermenting or pickling vegetables. And in my new book, Fermentation Journeys, I have a lot of information about different Chinese methods of fermenting vegetables and some Japanese methods of fermenting vegetables, you know, as well as information about kimchi, the Korean style of fermenting vegetables. So, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities in fermenting vegetables. It is a world of expansive possibilities. But just even taking that simple sauerkraut method, you know, you can do it with any kind of vegetables. It does not have to be cabbage. And you can mix different kinds of vegetables together. You can season them all sorts of different ways. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways that you can ferment your vegetables.
So besides the probiotic, qualities of fermentation, the thing this is another thing that a lot of people are looking at because of the long-term food storage thing. When they start hearing, the leaders of our country say we're going to have a food shortage, one of the things, and this is one of the reasons why we have Sandor Katz on the show, folks, fermented vegetables and fermented juices and such longer shelf life. Is that not right, sir?
Yes, but it's, you know, I could not tell you, like, sauerkraut has a shelf life of X long because it depends completely on where you're living and how warm it is and how warm you keep your kitchen. So, you know, the cooler the environment, the longer it can preserve. I actually was visiting a farm in Vermont a few years ago, and the farmer disappeared into his cellar, and he brought up some three-year-old sauerkraut that had never been in a refrigerator. And in a cellar that really stays the temperature of the earth, a salty, acidic, a product like that, I mean, it will be stable indefinitely. Where I live in Tennessee, my root cellar does not stay the earth temperature in the summer. It heats up into the 70s. So, you know, if I leave sauerkraut for a whole summer in my root cellar, by the end of the summer, I mean, it doesn't become dangerous or toxic. What it becomes is soft and mushy. It becomes like baby food. And to me, that becomes very unappealing. You know, your preservation horizon is, you know, somewhat, determined by where you have to store the food. But honestly, I mean, right now I'm eating this beautiful radish kraut that I made, at the end of October. And it's beautiful. I mean, here it is the beginning of April and it's wonderful and it'll be really great until June, but I got to finish it by the time summer temperatures start coming, because then it'll just turn into baby food and I won't want to eat it anymore. But of course, by June, there's plenty of fresh vegetables, coming up in my garden. So, you know, food preservation is not about preserving food forever. It's about, you know, taking what's available during the periods of abundance and preserving them to get you through the periods of relative scarcity.
That's true. Now, the thing, now you got, when you said radish kraut, now you got my curiosity up because I'm a big daikon radish fan. I like daikon, but I also like regular red radishes. And I'm just kind of curious as to what you do when you ferment radishes and cabbage together.
I mean, there's no cabbage in it, actually. It's daikon radishes. It's exactly the ones that you're excited about. But my, a farmer friend of mine plants acres of daikons as a cover crop. And then I just come by with a pickup truck. I fill up a pickup truck with daikon radishes. It's super fun to harvest that many vegetables. It doesn't even make a dent in his daikons, which he's mostly going to plow under anyway. And then I have a 55 gallon vessel that I fill up. You know, I shred them, salt them. The hardest part is actually just cleaning them, scrubbing.
Right.
Them. So,
right.
You know, I get lots of help. And then I get to play Santa Claus, sharing radish kraut with all my friends and neighbors all winter.
That is fascinating. Radish kraut. Gotta love that. Well, daikon, that's something we definitely have to explore. Can you grow that in most climates?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, daikon seems like a very versatile crop. I mean, I certainly don't know about the extremes of hot or the extremes of cold, but I think daikon has quite a wide latitude and there are a lot of different kinds of radishes. I mean, I love to grow and to eat and to ferment black Spanish radishes, watermelon radishes. There's a lot of wonderful radishes. Turnips work really well. You know, other kinds of root vegetables like celeriac ferments really well. You know, I mean, if people want to get creative with it, I mean, feel free to experiment, try any vegetable, but, you know, experiment in small batches so you can see what you like. You know, don't experiment in 55 gallon batches that take hundreds of pounds of vegetables.
Right. Now, this is from the book Sandor Katz's Fermentation Journeys, folks. It is available probably on Kindle, but you can also buy the book wherever the popular books are sold. The thing is that now, you know, this article you were talking about kimchi, and we literally, this is a Korean sauerkraut made through the process of lacto-fermentation. What's different about that versus the fermentation processes you use?
Well, okay, sauerkraut would be described generically as dry salting vegetables. You shred the vegetables and then you salt them and typically you don't add any liquid to it at all and you just draw, the salt draws juice out of the vegetables and you get the vegetables submerged under their own juices. An alternative style of fermenting, which you have to do if you're going to do whole vegetables or big chunks of vegetables is brining. And in brining, you create a saltwater solution, and you cover the vegetables with the saltwater solution. And generally, because that solution is going to dilute the flavor of the vegetables a little bit, usually you season that in different ways. Now, kimchi is typically made in what I would call a hybrid method, where the vegetables are usually brined first. They're shredded or chopped, however they're going to be chopped, put in a saltwater brine, generally for approximately 24 hours. And then that brine is drained. And in the process, the vegetables shrink a little bit. They lose some of their water. They become a little bit crisper because of the salting in the brine. And then separately, you mix up a spice paste. Sometimes there's a little bit of a fruit element. Sometimes the rice is made into a paste, and then spices are added to that. Usually chili peppers, usually lots of garlic, usually some ginger, often some onion or scallion or shallots. And then the spice paste is mixed with the vegetables, and then it's fermented. So, I mean, it's really not all, you know, it's not altogether different from sauerkraut, but it's a, you know, it's a slightly different method and technique.
But it is stinky, isn't it?
I think it's incredibly delicious. I mean, I would say that, you know, cruciferous vegetables release sulfur compounds when you ferment them. And a lot of people find, any kind of fermented cruciferous vegetables to be stinky. But I live my life in a cloud of fermenting cruciferous vegetables. And to me, they're not stinky at all.
Sure. Okay. Now, this is another thing, because you were talking about earlier yogurt. You make your own yogurt, and you're saying here you do not necessarily need a yogurt machine to do it. So go ahead and give me the recipe.
Well,
I'm sure there's a lot of people out there want to know.
You know, people have been – people in and around Turkey and the Middle East have been enjoying yogurt for thousands of years. And, you know, nobody had a plug-in yogurt maker until the 20th century. And, you know, people just employed various strategies to keep the yogurt warm. I mean, it could be as simple as wrapping it with a blanket. It could be putting it into the oven with a pilot light on. It could be putting it next to the heater. What I do is I use an insulated cooler, what you would use to, like, you know, to keep food cool on a picnic or go to a ball game or whatever. But instead of putting ice in it to make things cool, I put hot water in it to heat it up. And for most kinds of yogurts, which involve thermophilic bacteria that thrive at temperatures higher than body temperature, you want to incubate the yogurt somewhere around 110 degrees Fahrenheit. So I just use hot water to bring my insulated cooler up a little bit higher than 110 degrees Fahrenheit. And then meanwhile, I heat up my milk. Hotter than that, usually to about 180 degrees Fahrenheit. I cool it down to under 115 degrees Fahrenheit. I add my little bit of starter, my previous batch of yogurt. I mix it all up well, put it in jars, and put it in that pre-warmed insulated cooler. And then I just leave it there, you know, usually until the next morning.
Amazing. Now, there's a lot of my friends in Texas here where we are. And one of them in particular that lives to the north of me makes kombucha tea like nobody's business. And people, you know, I think that drinking that is an acquired taste. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, any food, including kombucha, can be made in a lot of different ways. So some kombucha is very sweet, and it's like drinking, you know, sweet tea or a sweet soft drink. Some are more acidic. Usually the kombucha maker is trying to find a balance between sweetness and acidity. Like all food and beverage production, it's largely subjective, you know, where you find your balance. So not all kombucha tastes the same. Some will taste better to you than others. Some will taste better to me than others. We might not agree on which ones taste the best. And, you know, to me, one of the most compelling reasons to make these things at home, just like making anything homemade, is you can make it the way you like it. And if you prefer things that are less sweet, you can start with less sugar. If you prefer it less acidic, you can ferment it for a shorter period of time. But you have a lot of control over the process. Because you're the one, who is, determining each of these variables.
So it's basically, this is mushroom, right?
Well, I mean, no, it's not a mushroom. It's, kombucha is, made by a community of organisms that have actually evolved into a very distinctive physical form that we call the mother of kombucha. And generically, this type of a starter is called a SCOBY, which is an acronym that stands for a symbiotic community of bacteria and yeast. And the symbiotic community of bacteria and yeast for kombucha looks like a little rubbery pancake. But it will really assume the shape of whatever kind of vessel you put it in. And basically you just like, you make some tea, you sweeten it with some sugar, cool it down to body temperature, add a little bit of mature kombucha or alternatively vinegar to acidify the environment. And then you just put that mother in, it'll float at the top. And after some number of days, if it's warmer, the metabolism will go faster. If it's a cooler environment, the metabolism will go more slowly. But it'll produce acids and consume sugars over time. And so by tasting it, you determine when the right moment is, when it's ready, and you can either drink it like that, or you can do a secondary fermentation where you add some herbal tea flavor or some fruit juice flavor or actually, one time in Texas, I saw a kombucha company that was making all of the classic soda flavors of kombucha. So they had cola kombucha, root beer kombucha, Dr. Kombucha. You can mix it with any kind of a flavoring you like and then carbonate it by sealing it in a bottle to trap the carbonation. And the only complicated part of the process is finding a kombucha mother, and that's not that hard. If you look on eBay or Amazon or you can go to places like culturesforhealth.com, but they're very widely available. I'm sure there's people listening. Everyone who makes kombucha ends up with more kombucha mothers than they know what to do with, and so people generally are very generous with them and love to share them.
Sure. Now, this is another thing that's of interest here because, see, in a food shortage, good luck finding cheese on the shelf in the grocery store. And you're saying basically you can make cheese at home and you have a recipe.
Well, you can make cheese at home, but you need milk.
Right. So, I mean, you use goat's milk. I mean, is that what people are doing?
Kind of milk. I mean, people make cheese out of human milk. People make cheese out of mare's milk. People make cheese out of sheep milk, goat milk, cow milk. Any kind of milk you can make cheese out of.
All right, let me ask you this, though. People are buying this 25-year shelf life, and they actually have milk in a can that's powdered. You add water. Can you then make cheese from that?
I don't know that you could make cheese out of powdered milk. I've never tried it. I know that it's difficult to make cheese not all cheese is the same. There's different styles of cheese. But I'm pretty sure that you would have a hard time making most styles of cheese from powdered milk.
I see. All right. Now, so fermented apple juice. This is something that, everybody likes to eat apples, but apple juice. I mean, there is an article that we're going to attach here from Homemade Mommy that actually describes all of that. Does that have the same kind of quantities of vitamin C that keeps a doctor away?
Well, I mean, yeah, certainly. I mean, fermentation is going to maintain the level of vitamin C in food. So that's not an issue. But, I mean, fermented apple juice is everywhere. That's called cider. Almost anywhere you can buy beer, you can buy cider.
All right. I got you there. See, it's just not an April Fool's joke, folks. That's why they have Angry Orchard out there. Now that's probably fermented carbonated cider with a twist of alcohol, right? All right. So fermented ketchup, the show notes say that once you start making your own fermented ketchup, you won't go back to the regular stuff. Why is that?
Well, I mean, sure, you traditionally ketchup, I mean, the word ketchup actually comes from, words, that were like Asian words, Chinese words, Indonesian words that were used to describe fermented fish sauce. And then, the concept of ketchup got reinterpreted as a fermented mushroom sauce, a fermented walnut sauce. And, you know, it's only, maybe in the 19th century that it started being a tomato based sauce. But yeah, sure. I mean, you know, most, you know, ketchup that you'll buy in the supermarket uses vinegar to stabilize it, but ketchup is much more delicious and will preserve just as well if you make it yourself and ferment it instead of adding vinegar to it.
Wonderful. Yeah, now we have all of this stuff, you know, 8 ways probiotics and healthy foods can heal your gut, lacto-fermented watermelon radishes, you only need 3 reasons to give fermented food a try, plus recipes, and all that's going to be included in your email blast. If you have not signed up for it, you need to do that now so you can get all these great recipes and add them to your arsenal of prepper supplies, et cetera, et cetera. Sandor Kass has the book, Fermentation Journeys, out, sold where popular books are sold, in Kindle, et cetera, et cetera. We appreciate you coming on the show. Has been enlightening, sir. We appreciate you and appreciate your time and all the research and everything you've done, putting it into a book that people can actually obtain and use as a means of survival. And we thank you so much for being on the show, finally, after such a long time out.
Okay, it's great to talk to you. Thanks, Dave.
You bet. Thank you so much. We are out of time today. We are going to be back again next Monday. Until then, God bless you and God bless the United States of America. Who's holding up the moon? Who is peeling back the darkness with the burning light of the moon? Who is standing on the mountains? Who is on the earth below? Bigger than the heavens and the lover of my soul. I lean to God, He is Yahweh. How great I am, He is Yahweh. The Lord of all, He is Yahweh. Cause of Sharon, He is Yahweh. A righteous Son, He is Yahweh. The 3-in-1, He is Yahweh. We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiatics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life. As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.